Folks, we are live. Welcome to episode 3506 of the Survival Podcast, and we are live for those tuning into the live feed. For everybody else listening on the audio side, it's pre-recorded. This is episode, again, 3506. This is Tuesday, June the 11th, 2024, and today we're going to do a show that I kind of alluded to a little quickly yesterday, things that we are taught that must be unlearned. I think the average person has been deeply harmed in their childhood, and not necessarily with some kind of major childhood trauma that we think of, you know, some sort of abuse or something like that, something that apparently every therapist believes everybody goes through. No, I mean that the conditioning that we are given in our education is harmful to us, not necessarily abusive. But what I mean by harmful is what is the school system supposed to do? It's to prepare you for the real world. So if you train, not teach, but train people to behave in ways counter to how the real world works and then tell them to go out in the real world and be successful, you've harmed them. And I think there are a lot of things, but I have about 20 of them for you today that we're trained to believe these things, and we literally have to unlearn them if we want to be truly successful in life. And don't get me wrong, there's plenty of people that never let go of any of those. And a person standing at a distance from them would say, well, they're successful. They have a job. They work for XYZ company. They got a 401k. They get 2 weeks of vacation a year. They raise two kids that aren't in prison. The daughter's not on the stripper pole. She's out doing something useful. These people are successful by any measure of the words. But I think success is relative to potential. So if your potential is to be a 9, you're never going to be a 10, but your potential is to be a 9, and you end up a 6, however you measure that, you failed to meet your potential. And you know, we can fail to meet our potential because we don't try hard enough. We can also fail because we tried really hard, but we did the wrong things. You know, back when Shaquille O'Neal was an active player in the NBA, the man practiced free throws all the time. And he did eventually get better, but there was literally a defense that Don, whatever his name is, I can't think of now, from the Dallas Mavericks came up with called Hack-a-Shaq. It was just anytime the guy gets the ball on the inside, you foul him and keep him from taking a shot because he's 100% when he's inside the paint just tossing it in because he's so daggone big, but he's, you know, going to get 20% at the line. So we're better off just fouling him. And he practiced and practiced and practiced. It wasn't a lack of work ethic. Shaq is a hard-working athlete. He worked hard. But he practiced badly, so he got good at being bad. And I think there's a lot of things in life like that that come from these 20 things we'll cover today that people really think they're doing the right thing, but it's detrimental to them reaching their potential. If they're a 10, they should get close to a 10. If they're an 8, they should get close to an 8. If they're a 7, they should get close to a 7. And again, that number is arbitrary based on your own assessment of your own life based on what you want. But if you go through life believing that the way to success is to do something that's basically 180 degrees out from what truly successful people have done, well, then no matter how hard you try, you're not going to reach your potential. If I teach you that the way to swim is by folding your arms across your body, crossing your ankles and wearing a 10-pound plate on your waist and holding your breath and waiting for your body to float itself to the surface and go to the edge of the pool, you're going to drown. And I think some of the things that we teach people and train people to believe as youths in our school system, and I am including even college and university here, are exactly that. You're teaching somebody to swim, but you're teaching them the wrong way. And the pool, of course, is actually life. So we'll dig into that in just a minute. Before we do, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day number one today is John Pugliano with the Wealth Stunning Podcast. John's one of us. He's been working with us since 2010 when I first met him in Salt Lake City at a prepper convention. He's an incredible investment manager. He's one of the few people that I know that's in that line of work that made himself a liquid millionaire before he ever took a client's money. And he's taken all of the knowledge that he has in watching the market. He created this podcast called the Wealth Studying Podcast. It comes out on average about once a week. It's just the highlights. They're short. They're usually somewhere between 8 and 25 minutes. And I really recommend you check them out. Again, it's called the Wealth Studying Podcast, where you can learn to grow your wealth like you grow your garden. Next up today is Anton's Land of Biltong. And I almost did it. I almost made it. I almost got to show you a piece of biltong, or specifically doors, which is a South African form of dry sausage today. But I ended up eating it for breakfast, so it's gone. And that's probably good, because if I had it here to show it to you, I would just end up eating it. There's no way I would get through an hour and a half podcast with a piece of duar sitting there, or a piece of biltong sitting there, and not be munching on it. And I don't have a guest, and I don't have any videos to play today, so it's better that I don't have it. But it's not good that you don't have any Anton's biltong or Anton's duars or any of the other great stuff you can get from Anton at Anton's Land of Biltong. He does pay for his sponsorship with product. Every other Wednesday, I get a great big box of biltong. You can have it shipped to your door, too. And the only thing I'll warn you about it is highly, highly addictive and very easy to eat a lot of it, because it's just that delicious. With that, let's get on into this. And again, I want to talk about the things that we need to unlearn today. But I think if we're going to understand that, we first need to understand a couple things. And one is the difference between training and teaching. And I've talked about this a lot, so I'll go quick, but it is really important to understand that training and teaching are not the same thing. To train somebody is to condition them to respond in a way where they literally can't respond otherwise. That they'll literally have to deprogram themselves to reinforce something to the point of habit becoming second nature. And so you don't even need sentience to train something. I can train a tree to grow in the shape of a rocking chair. There's people that actually do this. And then they cut the tree off and the rocking chair already exists because they trained it to grow by trimming and bending and tying it in a certain way. I can train a slime mold. I can train a dog. It's, again, the conditioning of an organism. Where teaching is to empower learning so that the person can then go off and learn more on their own, that they don't need you anymore. So if I train you to read, I condition you to look at four letters and know that they're pronounced a certain way and mean a certain thing. That's actually training. But then that reading is also teaching, because now your reading allows you to go out and learn for yourself. And most of what's being done to young people in our education system today is more training than it is teaching. And we need to understand why we even have a school system in our current form to understand this. If you don't understand the genesis and the intention of the creation of this form of education that we have today, which is still based on a Prussian model from the late 1800s, then there's no way to understand what it's actually doing and why it's doing what it's doing. And the purpose of the system when established was to create obedient workers. That's what it was designed to do. It was designed to condition the response. The bell rings, you move. You eat when you're told. You stop eating when you're stopped told. You work when you're told, and you stop working when you're told to stop. You show up on time. You follow the rules. And that was the Prussian model, to make the person intelligent enough to do the work, but not intelligent enough to challenge the system. And with a complete and total understanding, there would be certain gifted individuals that would rise above the level of training and teaching that they got. And those people then would become your upper elite, your top 10%, the managers, the owners, the entrepreneurs, etc. And some of that would be held within a caste style system based on family. But some of it, especially in the United States and Europe, would just naturally occur, that the cream would rise to the top. And if you weren't the cream, tough shit, even if you're only 1% off. That's how it's done. So then the next thing we need to do is, purpose of the system is what? It's what it does. So they did that in the beginning, and they got that, but they got other things with it as well. So what is the purpose of the education system? Not that a politician or a bureaucrat tells you, not that a proud soccer mom who has a bumper sticker saying where a kid goes to school is an honor student says, What does the system actually do if we step back and very cold and calculate, evaluate the system as to what it's doing? It is something that creates obedient workers. That's one of the things that it does, which was the original intent of the original designers. But as society's changed, the system has adapted. So it also creates what I would call obedient leeches on society. About half of the people in this country perform no valuable service to anybody else other than, I don't know, maybe they make CO2 for trees. Some of them are employed. Many of them are not. Many of them are on straight up welfare, but there's plenty of people employed in jobs that if they didn't go to work, nothing would happen. Especially they're in government jobs that don't really do anything. You can love them or hate them, but I just want you to think about this for a minute. When Elon Musk bought Twitter, he got rid of 6,000 employees. 6,000. And this is a private company. 6,000 employees. Gone. The site works exactly like it always has. What did those people do? Were they really necessary? So even in private industry, we have plenty of people who have jobs that don't really do anything that are takers. And your government doesn't care if you're a taker with a job or a taker on welfare, as long as you're obedient and follow the rules. And so that's what the system produces, people that are obedient rule followers, either as producers or consumers. It also creates class division, and it aggravates the differences. You know, you have the rich kids, the poor kids, the black kids, the white kids, the Hispanic kids, the kids from the right side of the tracks, the kids from the wrong side of the tracks. And then you introduce agitation, especially with social sciences, into this environment, and you aggravate that those differences so that you can act as the mediator and tell everybody what they're supposed to do. Anybody know what we call a system that works that way? Where the state agent, which a teacher is a state agent, they're an agent of the state. If you doubt that, there was recently a student assaulted a teacher, and I'm all for the student being prosecuted for what he did, but he wasn't charged with assault on a person. He was charged with assault on a government official. So you have the agents of the state aggravating and then moderating the differences between classes, and they're doing it on behalf of the state because it benefits both the state and industry. Does anybody know what we call that? What type of system of economics that is? It's really a system of socioeconomics. We call it fascism. Go look up the textbook definition of fascism, fascist economics, and tell me you won't find that exact description there. So it's basically designed to be the main apparatus of fascism for the state, because it's what it does, and the purpose of the system isn't what it claims to do, it's what it does. And you tell me it doesn't do that. It also provides for the illusion of intelligence. You get somebody with 3 degrees, and we already assume that they're smart or they wouldn't have 3 degrees, but I've met some people with 3 degrees that are dumber than a box of rocks. It creates the illusion of intelligence. We've gone so far now, we have kids that have graduation ceremonies for kindergarten, as though graduating kindergarten is an accomplishment. And I'll let that one go. I'll let it go because they're little kids and they feel really good. Okay, fine. I've seen graduation ceremonies for 5th grade. I've seen graduation ceremonies for 8th grade. And personally, I know some people are going to like think I'm throwing shade on people that don't deserve it, but I even think the concept of a graduation ceremony for high school is stupid. Anything that that many people do every year is not that important. It's not that special. We've created this idea that because you got a high school diploma, you've done something. You haven't done that much. Have you seen some of the people that are in college and how stupid they are? We created an illusionary form of intelligence. I'm not saying that nobody learns anything in school. I'm not saying there's not some brilliant people who owe a lot of their brilliance to the education they received coming up. I'm just saying we've also at the same time created the illusion of intelligence. Because I've hired educated idiots, and it's always a miserable experience when you realize that's what you've done. And it places education for the real world in the hands of people who've mostly never lived in the real world. Yes, I'm talking about the heroes that don't wear capes, the teachers. The average teacher, now not every teacher, but the average teacher, this is their life. They're born. They shit their pants. They get their butt wiped. They get either bottle or breastfed. They eventually start eating food. They sit in a high chair. They crap their pants. Eventually, they learn how not to crap their pants. Once they don't crap their pants anymore, the agents of the states known as teachers are willing to let them into a place we call a classroom. So their first real experience outside of their family home is a classroom. They enter that in kindergarten. They're there all the way through 12th grade. Generally, people that become teachers are decent students, right, in that they conform. And getting A's in school is really a matter of conformity. If you conform, you can get A and B's in school. Just about anybody can. So they're conformists, and then when they get to 12th grade, you know, they go to college because that's what they're told to do, and they follow the linear path, which is one of the things we will now have to unlearn. And then they go to college, and most people anymore don't even work part-time while they're in college, or if they do, it's little piddly at jobs. Then they get out of college, and they apply for a job. And since teachers, even though they are being laid off in certain school districts, if you want a job and you have a degree in education, you can get a fucking job somewhere. So they get a job really quick, and they go straight back to either a grade school, middle school, or high school. And they teach for 20, 30 years, and they never leave the school system. And these are the people that we've entrusted with preparing our children for, quote, the real world. But they don't live in the real world. In the real world, you get promotions based on your competency and your merit. In the school system, you get raises and promotions or whatever based on how long you were there. And I could go on, but I won't, because I'm not going to turn this to kick teachers in the head day. I'm just telling you that most teachers do not know the real world. They're used to, their entire life, they've had all summer off, just as one example. Their entire life, when they were kids, college students, teachers, 12 weeks a year off. Every government holiday, everybody gets paid the same. Everything's socialism. They do not live in a world based on meritocracy. And they're training children to enter a world based largely on meritocracy. The purpose of the system is what it does. Put people in charge of the future generation who do not know the real world and getting them ready for the new world, creating class division, agitating the difference, providing the illusions of intelligence, and creating obedient leeches and obedient workers. That's what it does. So now that we know what it does, and we know that that's its purpose, it's not hard to figure out why all the things I'm about to give you don't make any sense in the real world. So 20 things we're trained to believe that we must unlearn for higher levels of success in the real world. Number one, we are taught that the proper human diet is based on grains and seed oils and packaged foods. Now, we are literally trained this. I was trained with the food pyramid. Kids today are being trained with a plate that we paid $9 million for some marketing company to train a pyramid into a circle, right? But basically say the same things. And that food pyramid or that food plate is identical to the nutrient structure of a bag of cattle feed. You are not a cattle. Now, the purpose of the system is what it does. You're treated like cattle. You get your injections, right? You get your identification, your brand, and you're moved around in chutes from one room to the next, right? When you're told to be there, and they're going to harvest tax dollars from you at some point in the future, one way or another. So you're treated like cattle, but you're not supposed to be one, but maybe that's why they feed you like one. Now, I'm not going to go off on my soliloquies here about keto and carnivore and all that. I'm just going to tell you that human beings were not meant to live on grains and seed oils and packaged foods. And the bigger training in our youth that is what you're supposed to eat is just what they're fed. When you do something repetitive with a child through their entire childhood, up until the point they become a young adult, that's as much conditioning as you can do to a human being. It's far less important what you tell them and what you say to them and what's in a book than what you actually do and have them do. So since we feed our children K through 12 and through university on seed oils, high sugar containing things, and grains and packaged foods, we've taught them that that's the way they're supposed to eat. Now, remember I started this out saying if you're I don't expect you to be a 10 if your potential is an 8, but I expect you to be an 8 whatever that means to you, to fulfill your potential. If you are nutriently deficient and in poor health your entire life or suboptimum health your whole life because you're eating garbage, you're not going to fulfill your potential. You're not. And so this is something I think we have to unlearn. I'm not saying everybody needs to eat like I do. I am saying we should be eating whole foods. We should not be eating seed oils. We should not be eating high fructose corn syrup, large amounts of sugar, and that grains in general are not human food. I know that's hard for some of you to accept, but I'm back to, can you eat it in its form that it comes from the field in? And the answer is no. No. There's a lot of shit that has the wheat or barley before you can consume it without literally killing yourself on it. And a lot of food that we eat, and most of the high carbohydrate food, has something that has to be done for it before we can eat it. Honestly, we can eat meat and eggs in their raw form. We don't generally do it, but we can. As long as it's handled properly, there's no pathogen risk or worries. Our body can digest it just fine, and we do just fine on it. Most of the plant foods that we eat, they come from the center of grocery stores. If they were not highly processed, they wouldn't be edible. They wouldn't be edible. Next, don't ask people for money or things because you're being rude. You're not supposed to ask people for things. And then this young person grows up. You say, go get your ass into college. You know how you get into college? You fill out an application. You know what that means? You're asking for something. Admission into a school. Go get a job. You fill out a job application. What are you doing? You're asking for the opportunity to work for a company. Go find yourself a life partner, a husband or a wife. You have to ask someone to spend time with you. Most jobs have some level of things you need to procure. If you're a salesman, all you do is ask people for money in meetings all day long. If you're a manager, you ask people to get things done, right? If you're a corporate CEO, if everybody thinks a CEO can wave his hand and make shit happen, you have to build consensus with people. That's asking them to invest in your way of seeing things. Threatening to fire people only goes so far, especially at that level, because the people working directly for you at that level just say, fuck you, and go somewhere else. Everything we get done in life depends on our ability to sell ourselves and sell our ideas. And we've taught people that sell is a bad word. And every single person that draws a paycheck, somewhere, some motherfucker is selling so that your paycheck will cash on Friday. If no one was selling anything, you wouldn't have jack shit to show for what you do. No matter how important you think what you do is, someone has to sell it. Ah, what about those parasites, those bureaucrats? Somebody has to sell the idea that government's necessary to people. Right? Selling's not always, here I have a thing and I want you to give me money for it, right? Sometimes selling, again, is convincing people of an idea. So when we teach children, don't ask for things. Don't ask Aunt Susie for $5. You know, don't ask the teacher for extra time. We're conditioning them for failure. People that can politely and properly request things and obtain consensus become very successful. And I don't care where that person is going to be, a high-level salesperson that makes a great living because they can actually sell a thing, or someone that can build consensus within an organization, somebody that can build consensus on a team of engineers building a thing. All of it requires that we go out and we put ourselves out there and we ask for something, right? But why do you think we have so many, like, you know, boys want to ask a girl if they even still have dances anymore with boys and girls, right? You know, at like ninth grade, the kid walks up to this girl and like looks around, makes sure nobody sees him get shot down. He's like, do you want to dance? No. Okay. And runs away. We've conditioned that behavior. We condition that behavior. And you have some people that doesn't affect them. They just break out of it. You know, the guy that walks up to the girl and goes, you want to dance? And she goes, no. And he's like, what do you mean no? I don't see anybody else asking you, and then just walks off and asks somebody else, right? Like, that's the mindset that you have to have. And it's not about getting dates. It's about getting what you want in life. And it's not about doing it at the expense of others. It's that if I want something that I don't have, there's going to be some bridge to getting there that probably involves some other people. So you have to unlearn not asking people for things. because you've been conditioned to not ask people for things. And your entire success in life depends upon this kind of symbiotic relationship where we give and we get. But that means we have to, at some level, sell ourselves. Next, you are trained and taught to obey people with titles, positions, and letters after their names. Teacher tells you something, it's true, even if you know it's false. Tell me that's not the case. Tell me, it's like, why do you think so many people just bowed down salami, baloney to Tony Fauci during the COVIDs? Even though so much of what came out of his mouth made no sense to anybody that took 2 seconds to logically think about it. Even though all of us were called crazy conspiracy theorists have been proven right time and time and time again. And there's still people, oh no, you got to listen to Fauci. You got to listen to the government. Listen to my experts. Why do you think people do this? In the face of absolute evidence to the contrary of what they're being told, they still do it. Why do you think they do it? Because training is conditioning an organism so that it can only respond the way that you wish for it to under certain stimuli. That's why. You've been conditioned that if a person has enough credentials, they must know what they're talking about. Doctor tells you need a surgery. Well, damn it, you need that surgery. If they actually look at you cross-eyed if you say you want a second opinion first. Hell, if I'm going to have somebody cut into my body, and I'm not going to be dead tomorrow if I don't do it, then I'm going to get a second opinion. I'm going to get a second opinion because I think it makes sense to. And the only reason people don't is because they've been conditioned to obey and cede authority to people with certain titles. And I've seen it at ridiculous levels. You see people that are like a manager of a restaurant, and they can basically tell a person, hey, I'm going to throw you out. No, okay, I'll do what I'm told. Well, if you don't want to get thrown out of the restaurant, I get it. But I don't know. If I'm in that situation, I probably don't want to be there anyway. People are conditioned. A person in a white coat, a suit and tie, at the front of a room, behind a podium. Well, the real world doesn't work this way. Now, in the real world, you have to actually earn respect. Because what this leads to is two things. One, it leads to this compliant, mushy mindset of the populace. But it also leads to people getting titles and letters after their name and then expecting that everybody's just going to do whatever they say. And what they eventually do is they run into people that are thinking people that tell them to go get fucked. And they're incredibly ineffective as leaders. And they don't understand why they can't lead. They don't understand why they can't manage. They don't understand why they can't build a team. Because I did what they told me to do. I followed the linear path. I got the credentials. It says PhD after my name. Why aren't people listening to me? Because you're a dumbass. Or because you have no interpersonal skills. All right. Next, it teaches people that textbooks are never wrong. Whatever. It's one thing a book might be wrong. But if it's a textbook and it says this thing happened this way, you better write it down that way. You better put it that way. And you're absolutely insane if you think it's wrong. But if that were the case, you know, a lot of textbooks would never have to be revised. I mean, history, sure, if you had history like 1865 to present and that book is from 1985, right now you kind of need a new book because we had 1985 to 2024 left out. But we should be able to take the first part of the book and leave it the way that it was and make an addendum for it. Why do they change? Because they figured out they were wrong about shit. They figured out they're wrong about all kinds of shit, but we're not wrong now. You see how that works? Well, science changes, but this science is settled until it's not, and then it's settled again until it's not. This conditioning, again, is why people comply with whatever they're told. They do what the government says. They do what the media says. They do what teachers say. They do what industry leaders say. They do what comma experts say, right? But they have no real idea if they should be listening. The people that are successful in life question fucking everything. They question every opinion they're given. They question every fact that is claimed. They question everything. They often discover what they're told is true, but they also often discover just as frequently that it's not. And they make decisions based on reality versus consensus of others. And that's why they build shit that nobody ever thought of. Conformists never invent anything. They never create the next level of something. They never build something that just didn't exist out of nothingness into a thing. They're never, you know, a conformist is never going to be an Alexander Graham Bell. It's never going to be a Marconi. Never going to be a Da Vinci. Conformity does not equal innovation. And this is what we're trained to do, to believe that textbooks are never wrong. We are also trained to believe that people who follow the expectations of the crowd do best in life. A perfect example of that is college degrees and the linear path. Well, you go to school, you get good grades, you apply to college, you get into college, you get good grades, and then you have a good life, right? That is, you know, the expectation of the crowd. Every child should go to college. And I don't want to soapbox that issue either. I'm just pointing out that it's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous belief system. Do you need someone to fix your plumbing in your house when it's broken? Yes. Do you want that person to be competent and intelligent and courteous and able to do the job with, like, not making it worse, or not breaking something that wasn't already broken, or not stealing the shit out of your house? Yeah. Okay. Then you need people who are highly trained, highly competent, motivated, intelligent people who are plumbers. And I would say you really need the same thing for your electrician. Yeah, your plumbing, you can mess some stuff up. Electricity, you can seriously fuck some shit up, can't you? Like, your house burning down while you sleep in your bed because your electrician is an idiot. Now, neither one of those professions require a degree. And there's probably more people who got trained as electricians, came up in their craft and their trade, built their own companies and became millionaires, then there are people who went to college, got a degree in engineering, got a job, and became a millionaire. So, is the consensus of the crowd really the way to success? It depends. What does success look like for you? If success for you looks like being one of the crowd in kind of the middle of the road world where you know you can pay your bills and you have general happiness, then the consensus of the crowd probably is the way to go. If you want to be able to call your own shots, make your own rules, decide when you're going to take vacation instead of requesting it, you want to build a brand, build a company, build up yourself, have independence and freedom, be an inventor, be a creator, right? You want to be any of those things, then the way the crowd goes is the last thing that you want to do. So I actually don't have a problem with being taught the expectations and consensus mechanism, the crowd, the go-along, get-along philosophy. But I think that teaching it only, exclusively that way, leads to a complacent, compliant, wishy-washy, milquetoast population who will basically be obedient slaves. Purpose of the system being what it does. Because even the renegade, right? The intelligent renegade says, in this instance, at this moment, for this period of time, I will go along and get along because I know I need to get through this because the opportunity is on the other side of it. So there's a place for both of them, but instead we teach this one exclusively as though it's the always default answer. And people that really achieve, it's not. So if you want to be someone that really achieves, this is not the default answer. You have to unlearn it because you're conditioned to believe it. Okay. The next is failure is bad and should be avoided. I mean, the worst grade you can get is what, an F? You failed. Horrible, Johnny. You should be beaten with sticks and whipped like a dog because you failed your math test, right? We're taught that failure is always bad. But is failure always bad? Think of anybody that created anything, that really created something new. Didn't they fail to get there? How many freaking rockets has Elon Musk's company blown up? But you could argue they are the most successful space program that's ever existed. Like, I mean, it's like the U.S. government is talking about, we're going to do this thing and we're going to go launch. And then one day we're going to be able to go to the moon to launch, right? Like, and then we're going to launch. Like, we just put up a shitload of satellites. Now our Starship actually went up into space and didn't explode, even though we dropped it in the ocean somewhere, sent a car to fucking Mars. Like, how much failure did all that success take? in the initial space program of the United States government, how much shit did we blow up before we successfully put a man in space and brought him back to Earth, let alone one on the moon? Everything that hasn't been done yet that will be done will require failure before you have success. But if you're conditioned to believe that failing's bad, you can never be the innovator. You'll never be the risk taker. People look at what I've done with this podcast for 16 years and go, man, that's successful. Do you know how many things I fucked up first? How many things I failed at? How many things I was like halfway successful with, but it really wasn't worth doing? How many things I tried? That's how you get here. That's how you get to success. You get to success through failure. But you've been conditioned. And I'm telling you, there's people listening to me right now that are 60, 70 years old. They're still fighting this. Because when you condition someone to believe something at a very young age, it's very difficult to change them. You want to start an argument, get some 25-year-olds and some 50-year-olds together, right? And ask them about how many spaces go after a period and get out of the way, because they might beat the shit out of each other for it. If you're my age, period, space, space, right? And it doesn't matter who the fuck tells you we don't do that anymore. I bet you still do it. Why? Because when you were probably in 8th, 9th, 10th grade somewhere, there you had a typewriter or keyboard in class, and you were taught period, space, space. It's laid down, and this is a benevolent one. It doesn't really matter. Your life is not going to be hindered because you do two spaces and Bill does one. But just think about how ingrained it is. About the same age differential, Oxford comma, and there is no comma. Oxford comma, and there is a comma. Because it clears up things that could be confusing. And my response to it is, if you're a lazy-ass, inefficient writer, you might need an Oxford comma to make sure that the person reading it understands you didn't actually say to eat your Aunt Jane, right? But if you structured the sentence properly, and is a conjunction, it has no need of a comma. The comma is the standard. But who's right? Does it really matter? It's what you were trained on. So understand, if that's the case, with these little piddly bullshit things that don't really matter, imagine something that's integrated into your life on a daily basis, how hard it is to let go of, right? So failure is not bad, and it should not be avoided unless the failure is catastrophic enough, like to kill somebody or to make you bankrupt, right? You should always put mitigation strategies in against your failure, but failure itself being bad is an asinine way to see things. Remember Yoda? There is no try, do or do not. Bullshit. Right? It's a cool movie. I get it. I kind of like it. I dug it as a kid. I mean, you know, if you were a kid in 1977 and you saw the original Star Wars in a theater, it's the most amazing thing you ever saw, right? It's such a great story that Disney just keeps retelling it. They can't come up with a new fucking idea to save their life. But, you know, this there is no try is bullshit in the real world. All life is about trying and trying and trying. And then where the metaphor completes is you haven't done yet. All you've tried and failed. When you eventually succeed, you have done. But it's not do or do not, right? It's not that trying isn't the way to get to done. It's nonsense. It's nonsense. Life is about working through failure until you find success. But we condition people to believe the exact opposite. Next, if you work with others, you're cheating. If you work with others, you're cheating. If Bill helps you get the right answer to your problem, you've cheated. What do you do at the office when you know less about something than Bill? You go to Bill and you say, hey, Bill, can you help me work through this? How do you be, you know, do you think, this is part of why people look at their managers and think they don't do anything, because they delegate work to you. So they're doing more work than you can imagine usually, right? And this is what makes management a difficult profession, because you have people that have been conditioned to believe you're supposed to do everything yourself. So if you want it done, Bill, why the fuck aren't you doing it? Why'd you bring it to me? That's Bill's job to bring it to you. Everything we get done on any meaningful level generally requires the input of others. You know, I've got my guy Tom that handles all my web stuff for me. I can't do all that shit. I don't have time. I got to build the show. I got to build the brand. I got to produce the material. It's also the case, like, I just sent him chapter 2 of the cover crop course. I don't have the time and the knowledge to handle all the back end stuff with LearnDash and put all that stuff in there. Right? So I ask someone that knows how, and I compensate someone that knows how to do that. In school, it's considered cheating. Do you know what you tell somebody who works for you and you give them a project and they have this one piece of it that they like, they know they can't do it? And if they were to take and pay out of their own pocket and outsource it on behalf of your company and then fold it back into the rest of their work and give it back to you, and you found out they did it, you know what you would say? Damn, are you a dedicated fucking employee? Holy shit, I want to promote you. I want to give you a budget to do shit like that. In school, you pay somebody to do part of your work for you, you're a cheater. You're supposed to learn to do it for yourself. I thought we were supposed to get shit done. And I'm not saying there's not certain things that an individual needs to work through on their own to develop competence for. But I am saying the overriding idea that if you rely on somebody else to get something done, you've cheated, is nonsense. There is no high-paying job where you do 100% of everything yourself. And there damn sure is no entrepreneurs that do everything themselves. I mean, even me, I call myself a solopreneur, but yeah, I got Tom, I got my wife, and I've got my community. I've got you guys that do so much for me that are like a research team for me. Yeah. Working together is like, how many job descriptions say teamwork is important? And then but Johnny's learned not to do that. It's a tremendous, tremendous mistake. There's also the concept that there's always a right answer. Every problem has one correct answer. It's in the back of the book, and whatever it says is true, going back to another one that we need to let go of, right? That the book's never wrong, but there's one right answer to everything. One of the most impactful talks I ever heard was Michael Saylor talking to Robert Breedlove. And it was like the 13-part series they did on Bitcoin, but a tremendous amount of it had nothing directly to do with Bitcoin. And he talks about when he was a freshman, his first day in MIT as an engineering student. And the professor walks in and he has something in his hand. It turns out it is a tile recovered from the space shuttle Challenger disaster. And they hand the title and have the class pass it around. And the teacher says, what went wrong? And all these students start throwing out these ideas. You see, these kids were always the smartest kid in the room. And now they're in a room where all the kids are super smart. They're not the smartest person in the room anymore. But they're all also conditioned to believe that even if I'm smarter than the teacher knows the answer. They got the answer key. And he said it takes about 20 minutes of these people talking and the teacher going, yeah, we thought of that. Yeah, they tried that. That's not it either. No, that didn't work. Before there was like this collective light bulb moment and all these geniuses finally used their God-given brains and realized he doesn't know the answer either. There is an answer to this question, but it as of yet remains undiscovered. That's the real world. Most of the problems we have answers, but many of those answers are yet to be discovered. Many of the problems we have in the world have multiple answers. Now, why would you want to teach people? Why would you want to train and condition people? Problem A has answer B, and answer B is the only answer. Well, if you want a system built on a hierarchy where experts are respected, they have to have an answer. That is one piece of it. That is one piece of it. But the other thing is a political divide. If you want to divide people into a dichotomy, then they both need to think they have the right answer. If they both think they have the right answer, that means the other side must be wrong, and now you have true division. Now there's no, you know, quote-unquote, reaching across the aisle, which is uniparty talk for fucking over the American people. but in amongst ourselves. Political tribalism has gone to the extreme that it's in today, and to the ridiculous assertions within it because of this. One right answer equals, if I know what it is, then everybody else is wrong. We're like, if you look at something like, how do we solve the problem that we have with agricultural soils in decline? There isn't an answer. There's a tremendous number of answers, but there's not an answer. But people want the microwave button. They want to push one button, right? We want to talk about environmentalism. We got thousands of forms of pollution. We've got plastics in people's bodies, microplastics in our freaking nutsacks as adults we males have, right? Like, women have microplastics in their ovaries. This can't be good, right? All of the environmental problems, trioxins and dioxins and leaching of this and that. All we need is a carbon tax. I don't care where you fall on that issue. You should be able to see whether you fall where I fall on it or not. The folly of believing that we can just take the total of environmentalism down to less CO2 and everything will be fine. As though the mercury from coal mining doesn't matter. The sulfur leaching into the groundwater from coal mining doesn't matter. What's done to produce tires in combination with rubber and petroleum products and all the shit that comes from that doesn't matter. The cobalt being dug out of the ground in Western Africa doesn't matter. Right? I mean, come on. There's so much to that. It's so multi-layered. But if you believe one answer, then you're perfect for political tribalism. Because if you don't believe that answer, then your answer is, we don't need to do anything. Which I'm sad to say, when it comes to environmentalism, is largely the position that the right has. Now, I know there's plenty of people who would call themselves Republicans or conservatives or even libertarians that are very much environmentalist-minded. But the consensus of the majority is, we need to tax the air you breathe or we don't need to do anything at all. And both of them are stupid answers. They can only be believed by people that have been conditioned to believe in one right answer. If you weren't conditioned to believe in one right answer, you could not take either of those sides in that situation. It's too much of a multi-headed monster of complexity. So you have to unlearn that. Next, your worth is measured by grades and or the approval of others with authority. If you get A's, you're better than the person who got B's. That is a dumb pile of shit. I know people who got all A's in high school and they work in a concrete factory now and can barely breathe from the shit they breathe in, because even though they got A's, they weren't smart. They just conformed. And they couldn't figure out how to get out of the small ass town that we grew up in, so that's where they are. They're not dumb. One I'm thinking of, he works for Yuengling Brewery now. He was a very popular kid in school. He was a very gifted football player. He went to college, even played some college ball, did fairly well in college. Today he works on a line in a brewery. And I can tell you, he's probably not miserable, but it's probably not where he saw himself being after all that. But, you know, if you would judge him based on his grades in school, you'd say, well, he ain't the dumb jock. He's a smart kid. He's gone somewhere. He got all A's. So he took the easiest classes he could, and he did all the work. That's how he got A's, because he just worked the system. He wasn't better than, like, the kid I know that was a C-minus student in everything but art. And today he has a huge business, and he's done graphic design work for some of the biggest MLB, NBA teams out there, for the PGA, for multiple high-level colleges. Like, he's built an incredible business. He employs multiple people. But he was a C student. See, the real world doesn't really give a shit about the grades you get. The only time somebody might care about your grades after school is when you have no experience and it's the only thing that they have to judge. Like, I've had jobs that require a college degree, except that I had jobs before those that put me in direct competition with those companies. And when I spanked their ass for 2 years in sales, they no longer cared about that degree. They just wanted the guy that was kicking their ass, kicking ass for them instead of against them. All of a sudden, the requirement became irrelevant. Well, that's how everything is in the world. When you actually have a proven track record that you can do things, no one gives a shit what grade you got in high school. I promise you. But do we not have kids that are literally on the verge of things like suicide because their grades aren't good enough? What does a grade mean? That you conformed with what you were asked to do and put the right answer down. You memorized things and regurgitated them. I'm not saying there's no value in grades. I'm just saying that different people have different areas that they're good at. And some people will never be good at math, no matter what you do. Now, if they try hard enough, and this is another one we have to unlearn here in a moment that we'll talk about, they might be able to get a good grade in it, but they're not good at it. As soon as they walk away from a system that forces them to do it, they'll forget it all. I guarantee you, most of the people that are listening to this in the live feed right now, if you were given your final exams, and most of the people that got B's or higher on all your final exams in high school, not even college, if you've been out of school more than 20 years and you had to sit down and take those final exams again, and let's say four core subjects, most of you would get an A on one of them and very poor to failing grades on the other three. Some of you would do maybe really well on two of them, like let's say science and history, but then would do poor on like English and math, right? Like because you actually focus in the real world on the things that you want to do and that you're good at. And that's what you'll be rewarded for. And the fact that in our schools we have nothing carved out to acknowledge that is really ridiculous. And it has people who have the potential to be tens in life ending up sixes because they're still worried about all the things they can't do instead of focusing on what they can, which, again, is another bullet point that I have here in a minute. Next is that memorizing a thing is equal to being educated about a subject. So here's another example of this. When I was in the structured cabling business, there was a credential you could obtain called an RCDD. It's a big mouthful of words, a registered communication distribution designer. And there's two books, and these are like 3-inch thick, 3-ring binder technical manuals. And you had to study the fuck out of those books. And they had sneaky questions in it, kind of like the communications equivalent of taking a legal bar exam or something. Like, here's one example, and I've got a glass in front of me for those that are on the video. What is the proper separation of conduit on a pole? So imagine that's a telephone or a telegraph pole on a side of the road. What is the proper separation of conduit risers that go up a pole? Well, you'd say there's no way to answer that question, wouldn't you? Yeah. Well, how big around is the pole? You know, how many inches, how many feet, whatever is relative to the sun? No, the answer is 90 degrees. And the answer is 90 degrees because if I want to put the conduits on the leeward side of traffic so that if a vehicle hits that pole based on the direction of traffic, where the conduit is the furthest distance away, but yet separated as much as possible from each other, that's the maximum I can do is 90 degrees. One on the back side and one on the far leeward side of traffic. Okay? You know how valuable that is? It's not. It doesn't really matter that you know that. But you had to know that to pass the exam. You only can get so many wrong and pass the exam. And the exam had something like a 72% first-time failure rate. So I studied for it and I passed it. And I realized something when I got done and got that credential and put it on my business card. It didn't really matter. Anybody that really knew what it meant would know that unless you actually had real-world skill sets, that it didn't mean you could do anything. It just meant you could look at an RFP and say, this is compliant or this is not compliant, maybe. But you hand that person 5 boxes of cables, a couple boxes of jacks and patch panels and a print and say, go do that, manage this install for this data network. They may or may not be able to do it, but they can have the credential and not be able to do shit. And there's so much like that in our education system. Because the person got good grades, they think they're good at the thing they have a degree in. But if you have an architectural degree and you've never designed anything, you're not a good architect. You're potentially a good architect, but you're potentially a shitty architect. We don't really know yet. What do you call the guy who graduated last in medical school? Doctor. Do you want him as your doctor? You might have him. You don't know. You don't know. So we have made this equivalency, and what this does is it reinforces this obedience mentality in society. My experts, comma, experts say, well, I better believe it, right? I better believe it. I got some Gelman amnesia running there. Next, we're taught in school to wait to be chosen for things, to wait to be offered positions, to wait to be offered opportunities, to wait our turn. Yet life doesn't work that way. The guy in the office that sees the project coming up that goes to the boss before the project's even announced and says, Steve, I understand that this project's coming. I think I'd be a good lead on it, and I want the opportunity at it. He may not always get it, but he just went to the top of the selection list. Even if he wasn't even on the list before that moment. I promise you, having been a manager, having been a company owner, when some employee in your organization takes that level of initiative, they may not get the gig, but you are giving them the consideration, full and fair, and probably actually weighted toward them. Like, if they don't get it, they really just aren't ready yet, and you're probably going to pull them aside, and you're going to be like, listen, Bill, I really wanted to give you this opportunity. I just don't think you're ready yet, and I want to invest in you. So here's some things that you can do, and I'm going to put you on this project, but not in the lead. I want you to demonstrate you can be a team worker. I want you to bring these things away from it. I want a report from you at the end of what you thought you could do better. And then hopefully when we have another opportunity like this, I'll be able to say yes. But it starts because Bill fucking asked. People get places in life because they ask, because they take the opportunity, because they don't sit back and wait. Right? The only time you had me sitting back and waiting with like opportunities that was stuff I didn't actually want to do. I didn't want to do it, then I would sit there quietly and hope that they wouldn't ask me. And then I would do it if I was called on to do it. But if there was something that I thought would actually advance my career, advance my position, help me make more money, give me new experience, I went out and I went after it. But what happens to someone that makes that effort in school? They're generally told, sit down, shut up, and take your Ritalin or your Adderall or whatever the hell they have kids on today. This is something you have to unlearn. That if you want to be a 10 and you have a potential to be a 10, you're still only going to get there if you go out and get things, if you do not wait in line to be called upon, to be given your chance. Again, you're back to that dash, right? Your hyphen between the year you're born and the year you die, it gets shorter every minute. Every minute you spend waiting for an opportunity instead of taking an opportunity is wasted. And it's exactly the opposite of what they teach you in school. Don't admit you don't know things that you're expected to know. Don't admit you don't know. School teaches you to hide the fact that you don't know the answer, to try to talk your way around it, to try to trick the teacher into taking too long, and so the bell will ring, and you get out of there, and you can answer it tomorrow, right? Like, the worst thing you can do is say, I don't know. I don't know. I used to have this, trying to reprogram my son as he was growing up. I used to have this conversation all the time. I'd ask him his opinion on something. And he would say he didn't know. This was the problem masking itself as not being the problem. If he really didn't know, I would have said, okay, well, let's figure it out. But I knew he knew what he thought. So not only will you not admit what you don't know, you'll use I don't know to avoid giving an opinion because the opinion could be wrong in the eyes of the person asking you the question. So the only time you admit you don't know is when you do know, but you want to hide from your answer. How do we get anything accomplished in this world? How do we get, literally think of how fucked up that is. The only time it's safe to say you don't know is when you do know, but you want to hide from issuing your opinion. You got to destroy this one. When you don't know a thing, that's time to ask somebody else. That's time to rely on that teamwork. That's time to look something up. I find myself sometimes I'll be reading a book, and I usually use Kindle to read books on my phone because I can read it in the dark in bed. And I read a few, 20 minutes before I go to sleep. It helps shut my brain down from work. And sometimes there'll be a word in it, and I'm like, based on context, I'm pretty sure I know what that word means. But with Kindle, you can just highlight it in a definitional pop-up. Whenever I have a word, I'm not 100% sure what it means, or maybe I know what it means, but it's used in a weird context. I always look at it. I always ask technology for help. Admit that I'm not sure. That's how you get smarter. See, admitting you don't know is how you become more educated. You can't learn anything until you admit that you were wrong. Whatever you didn't know, you either didn't have the right answer, so you were wrong, or you had the wrong answer, so you were really wrong. So what happens when you're able to get by with the wrong answer? You never learn. So we've literally been trained not to learn. That's what this one's telling you. In school, you are trained to learn just enough to not question authority. Yeah? So we need to keep you a little bit guarded on admitting you don't know things, because once people start admitting what they don't know, they open the pathway to learning everything, at least everything they find interesting and need or want to learn. Right? We also are taught in school that everyone is equal and qualifies for your time and attention at the same level. You know what a guy that got, you call a guy that owns a company that treats his company and his clients that way? You call him bankrupt. He ain't going to make it. He ain't going to make it. I mean, even among customers. Do you think all customers are equal? You know, if you're in a business like mine, somewhat, pretty much everybody pays the same price for the same product. But when you're in a company that's delivering solutions and you have a customer that's a $5 million a year customer, you have one that's a $50,000 a year customer, it isn't that you don't value them both, but you damn sure value the $5 million customer more. You damn sure do. You have two employees. One shows up for work on time every day and does what they're asked to do and is out the fucking door the second the bell rings. They never seek any additional opportunity. They never really do anything wrong, but they never take the extra step. They want a meeting with you. There's another employee that you have that's always closing the door, last person out. You know, you leave as the owner and they're still there working. They always take overtime. They always do more and they want a meeting with you. Who gets the meeting first? Who gets the meeting first? They're not equal. They don't equally qualify for your time. They don't. Your receptionist is not as valuable as the engineer that builds your products. I don't care that that makes somebody, you know, Susan, the receptionist, her feelings are hurt over that. I can replace Susan with a phone call to a fucking temp agency. It's just true. It's not about the person having personal value, but in the real world, see, why do teachers teach it? Because that's how it is for teachers. If you're a fifth grade teacher in this school district and you've been teaching for 10 years, you make this much money. Right? And if you want to see the principal, you're equal in status to the other teacher down the hall. That's what I said. The people preparing your children from the real world do not live in the real world. They've never lived in the real world most of their lives. They've existed in this bubble. Of this equality bubble where everybody's equal. Everybody's opinion is valid even when it's wrong, right? No, it's not how it works. It's not how it works. The person that's disruptive is just as entitled to the education as to the person who shows up ready to learn. No, it's artificial bubble that only can exist because the entire school system is predicated upon conscription of money and conscription of customer. Every child will go to school, and you will pay for that child's education even if you don't have one. That's the only way you create something this artificial, that everybody qualifies for everything equally. No, it's not how the real world works. And again, anybody that tries to run a company that way will be bankrupt. All our employees are equally important to us. I'm sorry, you're stupid. You're stupid, you live in fantasy land, and you're going to go broke. Because they're not. Your janitor, I'm sure he's a nice guy. I'm sure everybody appreciates the fact the place is clean every morning when they come into work. But again, I can replace the janitor like, boom. There's no janitorial insurance. You know, where like if you lose your janitor, here's $100,000 to find a new one. We have key man insurance. Key man insurance is this engineer that's working on this project is the entire company right now. Without him, we can't do it. He qualifies for my time more than a janitor. I'm sorry. It's the real world. If it's bothering you that I'm saying that, it's because you were conditioned to believe otherwise, right? Avoid taking risks. Kind of lumps in there with failure is bad. But risks are not necessarily failures. Risks are doing anything apart from the status quo, right? So it's something you often had to overcome as a salesperson. Like when I was selling and I was up against a bigger brand that company had used before, and they never used my brand. Well, what's in the mind of that person that's speccing the product or cutting the purchase order or whatever is, well, no one ever got fired for buying from Cisco, but this Garrett company, if it goes wrong, it could hurt me. So you had to overcome that. The risk is that we'll drop the ball. The mitigation of the risk is here's all the other customers that are happy with us, and here's the money that you can save. You saved your company. But that person had to take a risk on a new supplier. You know, and sometimes we would get around that risk by saying, why don't we do this? Why don't you put a 60-day PO in for two boxes, and we'll put them in your lab, and you can run through the tests. And if you want to keep them at the end of the 60 days, you cut us a check on the PO, and then you buy more if you need them. And if you don't want them, you can return them. That's how we used to do demos. And they almost that would get you in the system, and you almost always be able to get more business that way. But you had to get that person to take a risk. Well, if you don't understand taking risks yourself, you can't get somebody to take a risk on your behalf. Risk and reward go hand in hand. But we teach people this incredible. For all the talk of the education system being liberal, and politically it is, it's incredibly conservative from the standpoint of just do what you're told. The way my dad used to describe it is they were preparing you for a job to work for the city government where you go to work, you put your pencil on the right and your paper on the left and keep your mouth shut and only do what you're told and everything will be okay. Perfect description of public school. Perfect description of it. And we have to unlearn this. Next is that equality is possible and equity is noble and virtuous. Everybody's equal. We just kind of covered that in some ways, but no, not everybody's equal. Some people have an IQ of 80 and some people have an IQ of 110. Intellectually, they're not equals. But sometimes the guy with the IQ of 80 is a savant at, let's say, working on trucks. And the guy with an IQ of 110 or 120 that would be a great engineer couldn't fix a truck to save his life. They're not equal. They both excel at different things. And they both are weak at different things. So there is no equality. There will never be equality. Men and women are not equal. The false conditioning to believe that they are is what leads to this shit where if a dude wears a dress and pops some estrogen pills, it's okay for him to have a wrestling match with a female. It's okay for him to compete in women's sports. It's okay to cut the sexual reproductive organs off a teenager because they're equal anyway. They're not equal. There are things that, in general, women are better at than men, and things that, in general, men are better at than women. And that's just sex. That's just, even races have certain things that they're stronger or weaker at. Have you taken a look at the NFL? I know people are going to say this is racist or something, but there's a hell of a lot more gifted black athletes in that type of physical sport than there are white guys. It just is the case. It just is the case that certain aspects of their physical conditioning tend to be. That doesn't mean there's not some amazing white athletes. It doesn't mean there's some black people that couldn't get one foot out of the way of the other. It's just a generalization. And generalizations are legitimate. And this idea that we can have equality makes us stupid as a species. Because we're always seeking something that's impossible to discover. It's like looking for the land of Narnia. It's in a book you can read about, but it ain't real. You're not going to find a talking lion in the wardrobe to tell you what to do, right? You're not. It's not a real place. It's like believing in the Star Trek universe, right? It might make a cool dream. Maybe you could turn into an author and write a book about it, but it's not real. Equality's not real. There is no equality. There's not even equality under the law. That's a nice thing to shoot for, but it's not true. You get two people accused of the same crime. One of them is rich and can afford the best attorneys known to man. The other one gets a public defender. Who has a better chance of going to prison? Who has a better chance of going home? There is no equality. Stop seeking it. And equity is even worse. Equality is at least a noble pursuit. We should strive for as much equality within a system as we can get. We know it's never going to happen, but we should try to at least give people the same opportunities and judge them on the same results, right? And that's a noble pursuit. But equity? Equity is that we should get the same results. And we've conditioned people to believe that equity is noble and virtuous. It is not. To demand equity is to demand that the person who didn't work as hard get the equal reward to the person who did work really hard. To demand that the person that got poor results is treated with equity to the person who got great results. This is why we have people with freaking low B averages now getting into medical school. Medical school. There's certain jobs that really you shouldn't have if you're not among the best candidates for it. And when you start talking about a job where you cut people open and take their spleen out, that qualifies, I'm pretty sure. Maybe we wouldn't be making jokes about Boeing being boing, boing, boing if Boeing wasn't DEI hiring people and expecting equity to come. You won't ever have equal results from different individuals. You will never have it. You will never have it. So believing you do leads to bad things, terrible things. And so if you want to meet your potential and you want to build something really amazing in your life and you need teams around you, you have to accept right from the beginning. They're not equal and they cannot be equitable in the results that they get. And I cannot treat them the same. And if you do, again, there's a word for what you'll become. It's bankrupt. Go woke, get broke. Schools also teach us that we need to knuckle down and focus and work the hardest on the things that we're the worst at. Right? If you get decent grades in science and history and English, and you get terrible grades in math, what you should do is focus all in on math. Now, I just said it. Maybe you've never heard anybody put it that way. Let me say it again. You get good grades in English, you get great grades in history, and you get good grades in science, and you get poor grades in mathematics. You're clearly not lazy, or you wouldn't get good grades in the other subjects. You get good grades, and the best thing that you do is your history. You know the shit out of history. You love it. You have passion for it. But what you're supposed to do is put all your effort into being better at mathematics. Do you know how stupid that sounds? Did it ring stupid in your ear when I said it twice? Are you starting to get how dumb this is? Does anybody pursue the thing that they're weakest at as their profession by choice anyway? Is that student who doubles and triples and quadruples down to eke out a B in mathematics going to pursue a career that highly relies on mathematics? Probably going to be a history teacher, the one we just described. Right? Or maybe they're really good at science and they're going to learn just enough mathematics to match the science course that they want a trajectory from in their life. No, we focus as humans, once we get out of this fake bubble we call school, on what we're good at. School should be about discovering what we're great at and then becoming better at it. It doesn't matter that the guy that does your plumbing can't do advanced calculus. It doesn't matter. He doesn't need it. He needs enough math to be able to measure a pipe with a fucking tape measure, cut it, and install it in a way that it doesn't leak. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. The guy that's a marketing analyst, he needs enough algebra to build a spreadsheet, and not anymore. He also doesn't need advanced calculus or advanced trigonometry, right? The person that is going to be a computer programmer needs math, but they don't need fucking organic chemistry. Once we find what we're great at, we should go at that hard. But what do they teach you to do? Work on what you're weak at. You know what you do? When you get out to the point where you're on your own, you're running your own show, you're building your own business, you know what you do with the stuff you're weak at? You hire someone who's good at it to do that, and you pay them to do it. You don't work harder at it. I'm not a good programmer. I'm not going to double down and learn to program. I don't want to be a programmer. I want to make programs, right? Not program code. I want to make programs like podcasts. So I hire someone that can do this. That's the real world. We are teaching, again, I'm saying, in every one of these bullet points, when you really think about it, we're teaching young people to think 180 degrees backwards from what actually gets people ahead in society. Do you not see why we're so screwed up? Why we, you know, people say, what happened to America's entrepreneurial spirit? We educated it out of our population over multiple generations. That's what happened to it. We conditioned it to go away. The purpose of the system is what it does, right? School equals education is something else we've been taught. What that leads to is if I want this path, then I need to know what school goes with it to get to this result. Well, that's not how most people actually succeed. About 39% of people with college degrees work in their field of study, which means that 61% don't, which means that's the majority by a large margin, which means the majority of people that are successful in life didn't get there because school equaled education, experience equaled education. So they got their degree in whatever the hell they got their degree in. They went out and farted around with it. They couldn't find a job with it. They took something else. They found another opportunity. They met somebody who told them there was an opening over here. They went and did that. They became good at it, and then they excelled at it, and then they moved up in that space. School did not equal education. Now, sometimes certain schools do equal education. You know, 6 months going to welding school is probably time well spent. Can you learn to weld without it? Yes. Would you probably do better going through school and getting certification in that particular skill? You probably would. And you know what you're going to do? You're going to focus on welding, fabrication, tools, et cetera. You're not going to be studying like how photosynthesis works at the bottom of the ocean, at the furthest depths of the ocean that the sunlight can still reach. Because it's irrelevant to what you're doing. It's a trade school that focuses on the trade. And there's other schools that, you know, if you want to be a doctor, you got to go to medical school. I get it. I understand it. But it's not 100% person with this degree is qualified in this space. No way. You know, I love my niece. And she just graduated from Texas A&M, very prestigious school in Texas. Despite all the Aggie jokes, with a degree in poultry science, okay? And her best friend was at her graduation. She had graduated the semester before, so like 6 months apart. And my wife and I listened to them talk about all the stuff that they learned in poultry science and getting their degrees. And when we left, my wife said, God, I love her, but I think we probably know more about ducks and chickens and stuff than they do. And I said, of course we do. We've cared for them for over a decade. They've studied them in school. And they've studied them in school from one angle, putting them in a chicken house and not having them die. Right? And I'm not putting her down. She's a wonderful person. By the way, she's on a career path now. It's probably going to lead her into the world of zoology. She's working for a zoo, entry-level position. She'll probably do really, really well there because what she really wanted to be was a veterinarian, but she discovered, even though she was a straight-A student, she didn't have the academic chops for vet school. She ran into the organic chemistry wall hard. But she'll find another path because school doesn't equal the education. Now, the school might have equaled an opportunity, and I'm telling you, the A&M alumni network is a big deal. Like, if you have a hiring manager and one of the candidates is from A&M, they're getting a fucking job, man. But in the end, school did not equal education. School was just a stepstone along the way. Conforming to the group consensus is the formula for success. Now, I'm not talking about what we talked about earlier with, like, every child should go to college. That's the larger macro. I'm talking more of the micro consensus. That when you have a room in a meeting at work and there's 10 people and 9 have all signed off on the idea and you think it's a stupid idea, what society and school teaches you is just shut up. Just don't voice your opposition. It's going to make you stick up like a nail that needs to be hammered down, because that's what happens to you in school. The teacher says something's true. Everybody believes it. You know damn well it's not. And you say, I'm sorry, Mrs. Smith, but that's not how this happened. I read this other book that's far more fact-based, and it says this guy actually did this thing, not the thing he said he did. Shut up. Quit disrupting. Quit questioning authority, right? So that conditions this idea that in a group you should go along and get along. And like I said earlier, there are places for it. But it's not a default. Again, it is the person who says, look, I see a flaw in this marketing plan. And even if they kind of go more toward the group consensus, that person stands out as someone who's a thinking individual, right? Now, you have to learn how to do this tactfully. You can't be like, you're all a bunch of idiots and you're so stupid you don't see this. It needs to be more like, well, has anybody thought about the implications of X versus Y? And maybe before we make the final decision on this, we should look at that. That is how you stick out in a positive way. And that's often how you gain consensus from that group back, even though they were all opposed to it. Because somebody's going to go, wait a minute, yeah, we didn't really think of that, did we? Well, what about this? And then all of a sudden the group starts to move toward you instead of you toward the group. It's always one or two people that see the flaw, because most people are going along and get along. So since the boss says he likes this thing, well, I like it too. Doesn't mean it's right. You have to unlearn that, right? Ask permission before you start things. Boy, that is so ingrained in the school system, isn't it? If you want to do a thing, you have to ask permission to do it. Do you think Thomas Edison asked for permission to try to make a light bulb? Do you think Marconi asked for permission to try to make a radio or Bell to make a telephone? Do you think anybody who's ever made a dramatic difference that changed the world asked for permission before they acted? Do you think the Wright brothers phoned up the government and asked them if it would be okay if they tried to make an airplane out of a bicycle? I know that's not what they really did. I'm trying to be funny a little bit, right? Whoever made a major impact on the world asked permission before they acted. Do you think when I started changing this landscape on my property, I asked anybody's permission? Do you think I asked permission from, like, the, I don't know, Federal Communications Commission or something before I started a podcast? I mean, you don't ask for permission. Right. You act. It's what's the old saying? It's easier to ask for forgiveness than permission. Now, you have to be careful. Is the thing you're going to do going to wind you up in jail or bankrupt or something? Those are unmitigated risks. Those are not worth taking. But in the end, we should always seek to get to the action component as quickly as possible. You know what happens when people take the approach of asking permission before they act? They use no as an excuse to never take the action they were probably never going to take in the first place. Half the time they ask, they were only asking to look like they were going to do something. They're playing a part, and they were hoping to get a no. So when they get a no, they can say, well, at least I tried. I've never done that. You know, one of the companies I worked for, we had a new software program that we brought in to replace Microsoft Access, and it really sucked, and I didn't like it. But eventually I learned how to use it, and I was like, okay, we're stuck with it now. And the guy that was the ops manager of that company came to me and said I had to do this, and he explained why, and it was actually a good reason. And then without anybody asking me to, I wrote a manual for the company on how to use it. And I just went and handed it to my boss. Said, if you don't like it, change it or throw it away. But if you want to solve this problem, there you go. This is how to do everything that's done on a regular basis for every department, because procurement's different than sales, etc. That's how you get shit done. Well, my daughter-in-law got a job. She ended up taking a different job, so it didn't end up mattering. She didn't end up having the opportunity, but I don't think she would have done it anyway. But it was a medical records coding job, and I told her to develop a spreadsheet that tracked her metrics of speed and accuracy, and to hold herself and to review herself every 5 days, every week, every Friday at the end of your shift, review your performance from the week before. Build it. I was like, I'll help you. I'll show you how to make charts and graphs and everything. And at 90 days, because that's what they said, this is as much as we can pay you. We'll give you a review in 90 days and tell you if you get a raise, which is always, this is what happens when you do that. Well, I would love to right now. I can't. Even though they said they could 90 days ago. We'll have to look at 6 months or 1 year or whatever. I just got a budget. They didn't get any of that shit. They don't want to ask. They don't want to have to ask. So if they can just make you go away, they won't have to deal with it, right? That's what they tell you no. But when you walk in there and go, so this is where I started, this is the progression I've been trying, and you can demonstrate your proficiency improving over time with concrete numbers, you're really hard to say no to. You also look pretty good for a management role because you developed a system of metrics that the company hadn't developed yet, right? That is impressive. But if you went and asked permission, you're probably going to get a no to that. Like, well, they would say, well, that's not your place. Don't worry about that. You don't know what you're doing. You don't. The person doing the job doesn't know how to judge the effectiveness of the job. Are you high? You don't ask for permission. You go get shit done. You go, and you've got to change that in your mind. And then the last one is that success is linear. The success always looks like you start out here and then you go to this school and you get this degree and you work for this many years and you get this additional certification and then you become successful. Very few people reach success in a straight linear path. You notice I have people on from all walks of life as guests. We have one interview a week. There was a few years of the show. We did two interviews a week for several years. So there's a lot of interviews out there. And whatever that person is doing, I always ask the same question. Let's go back to before you were doing what you're doing now. Back to spacing out in study hall. Y'all have heard me say it. Trying to get the courage up to ask that girl or guy out in the next row. Spaced out, daydreaming, whatever. How do you go from that to this? How many times has that question been answered with a linear path? So I went to school and I studied this and then I got my first job in this field and there's a lot of times that's in there. Well, I went to school for this, but it's not what they're doing. And there's always this wonky path in between. The path to success is almost always wonky, guys. It's almost always wonky, gals. It really is. It's almost never linear, but yet we condition people to believe it's linear. And why do we do that in school? Because school is a linear path. K through 12. College, and then possibly advanced degrees like master's, PhD, et cetera. And you have to justify your linear system with a linear path to success, which doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. Now, again, for some really regulated, tied-in professions, it's a fairly linear path. Lawyers, doctors, certain engineers in certain positions. But in general, most people that actually build true success in their life, it's not linear at all. So if you're seeking a linear path to success and it doesn't exist, you're not going to have success. You see how simple this is. Anyway, my final thoughts are in this one. There's people that when you talk like this, they want to get involved. They want to change the system. You know, why don't you run for school board, Jack, and change the system from the inside? You can't change this system because this system is predicated on having all 20 of these things in it for it to function. You can't change the school system to tell people not to ask for things because then you would have a whole bunch of kids asking for things all the time. And that would be disorder in a system that runs on order. Yeah? You can't tell people in the system that you've designed and you have 150 years of history with to work together because it's cheating in the system collaboration is like one project a year or something like that, right? Instead of why doesn't everybody get together and figure out how to do this problem? You know, you learn the most by teaching. Your natural mathematical person would become even better in that situation. The person that's never going to be good at it's never going to be good at it anyway. But you can't change the system. You can't change a system that teaches school is equal to education when the system itself is the school that's charging for education. You see what I mean? The system is designed the way it is because it's a system of conformism and training and conditioning that serves its master. And the master is the person who pays the bills. And I know this is something else you have to unlearn. You think that's you because it's paid for with your tax money, but you don't sign the check. You don't allocate the funds. You're just the tax cattle that's out in the field eating the grass. That you're a Maasai cattle, or you're bled and milked at the end of each day for the benefit of the herd owner. The herd owner is the state, the government. The government is the one that says this school gets this much money this year. And so they're in charge. They're the master of the system. And what does the master of any system want the system to do? Serve the master. So is the state, would the state be benefited? Let's look at this. Let's end it this way today. Would the state be benefited if the average person in this country ate a healthy diet, a truly healthy diet that shit-canned the trillions of dollars being made in the medical industry? Would the state be better off for that? Would the state be better off if people learned how to ask for things that they really wanted in life and rely on others instead of the state to provide for their needs? Would the state benefit by admitting that their textbooks are often wrong and will need to be changed in the future? Does the state benefit from that? Would the state benefit from a society willing to take risk instead of run to safety? And I'm not going to go through all of them, but you get it. Right? But you get it. The state doesn't benefit from these things being changed. The state's the one that pays the bill. The state is the master of the system. The state is the direct beneficiary of the system. Why would it ever change? And the answer is it never will change. There's only one way it changes, completely crash to the ground and be obliterated and replaced. It can't be reformed. There's no room in the system for reformation. There isn't. Right? I'm sorry. And I've never seen anyone make the case to me that there is. And so I'm not trying to fix it. Right? I don't complain about things without providing solutions. But sometimes the solution is outside of the thing that you're complaining about. The solution is don't let these people at your children homeschool if you can. If you can't, teach your children these things while they're coming up. Make them rebels within the system with an understanding of when to go along to get along so that they don't get thrown out. But it'd be better if they didn't go at all. And if you went, then you need to undo all this stuff in your own mind. You're the master programmer of the 3-pound computer in your bone skull. You have to learn to unlearn these things. And so that's the solution. The solution is to understand that a lot of what they're conditioning you to believe and do and how to behave is wrong, and accept that conditioning works on intelligent beings, which you are, and then realize it's up to the intelligent being to recognize the conditioning and undo that which has been done. That's the solution. It's not a simple solution. It's not a solution with only one right answer. It's a complex, multi-headed monster that has to be constantly beaten back because of how much damage was done to you as a child. With that, I hope you enjoyed today's show. If you did and you like the work that we do and you want to support us, one of the ways you can do that is do your online shopping starting at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. Today's item of the day, same one as I had yesterday. It's the Lavor Retracting Hose Reel. I love this thing. I mounted mine out front on one of our oak trees for my wife. She loves it. It's allowed her to do things. She's had to drag this hose between the house and the garage and put 200-foot hoses together to reach certain things because I've never run pipe over that area before. But the big thing is putting it away. The ability to, like, pull that hose out as far as you want, do whatever you need to with it, give it a tug, and walk it back in, have it put away perfectly every time is just awesome. Check it out. It is an awesome, awesome tool. And remember, you can find all kinds of stuff that I've reviewed over the years, both from Favor and on Amazon at tspaz.com. And you'll help us out as long as you start your shopping there, no matter what you buy, if you use our links and our discount code with Favor that will give you 5% off not just this product, but anything that you buy from Favor. And with that, the only other thing I want to remind you today is we do have an MSB sale that's actively going on. And I don't do these a lot. In fact, the last one I did was in November of 2022. And I've got the MSB on sale right now for $35. MSB pays for itself even at full price. It really pays for itself at $35. I mean, just like the cannabis products alone, if you use cannabis products, the discount on those are huge. And there's a ton of other supporting vendors that offer discounts that you can get as an MSB member, put your money right back in your pocket. Most people that I hear from that are MSB members say they make money every year being a member. So it's an easy, no real cost, long-term way to support the show. And the discount code right now is TSPC. I've heard from people that, you know, this is a time of year. I run sales this time of year because this is the time of year when people are on vacation and stuff like that. So people that got back in after last week and all are like, is that sale still running? It is running until Monday next week, which I think is around the 20th or something like that, somewhere in that range, like next Monday. So today's Tuesday, next Monday. So this weekend, that Monday, close the business, it ends. And I don't care if your dog ate your discount code. When I say it's when a sale ends, it's when a sale ends. But $35 a year, TSPC is the discount code. Take care, guys. Thanks for tuning in today. Tomorrow we'll have an interview. And we're going to be talking to Sean Overton tomorrow about establishing abundance in places that most would look at as useless, probably like rocky backyards like I got. Take care, guys. I will catch up with you tomorrow with that. They could bail you out, just run you around. They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. You don't have to be another face in the crowd. You don't have to live the way they tell you to. Make your own way, the others will follow. The revolution.